At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and Gordon Chang and I are very privileged to be speaking to a huge success, Charles Burton and his new book, The Beaver and the Dragon, How China Outmaneuvered Canada's Diplomacy, Security, and Sovereignty. Canada we can trust to correct itself. That is not true for the People's Republic of China. So we point to stories that are appearing out of, I've read them out of London, but they're everywhere about Chinese numbers. Projected GDP growth, industrial production, and the one I'm keen on, which is consumption goals for the Chinese people. Gordon, your reading of these numbers in general, before we turn to the politics of them, are there
well,
any...
Well, first there are two things that I thought were extremely significant. One of them was that industrial production in September increased 6.5% year on year. That means, and that number is better than most people thought, that means that consumption share of the economy must be declining, because what you have is more and more factories turning out more and more stuff, at least according to the official numbers. The other number, which is a clue, is that fixed asset investment for the first 9 months of the year fell 0.5%. And that's a real warning that the main engines of China's economy, other than the factories, is just failing. So this is a sign that the Chinese economy is getting down. And remember, these are official numbers. The real numbers could very well be worse.
Charles, I come to you with a story from 1954. Frederick Paul, the science fiction writer. Wrote it, and it's been reproduced in omnibuses of science fiction ever since, 70 years now. I read it in the 1960s and tried to remember it, who wrote it and why. The story goes like this, and I have it now. It's Frederick Paul. They invented AI so I could ask that question. AI had it right away. The story was about a dystopian present, 1954, in which the economy had to keep going by producing items, toasters, cars, patio decks. But the rich people didn't care to buy. It was burdensome. They had everything they wanted. They lived back to nature. They had beautiful homes. They didn't need much power. They didn't have to work. So that didn't work for the, if the rich people aren't going to buy, who's going to buy this stuff we're depending upon to maintain jobs and manufacturing and GDP? They came up with a solution. The poorer you are, the more you had to buy every month, so that the poor people lived in these lavish homes stuffed with gizmos and cars everywhere they didn't need, and they had to shop every day, almost 20 hours a day, to keep up. Now, that was 1954. It's striking to me that China is now in a quandary similar, and the news was that in the fourth plenum, they're entertaining the idea of goals for consumption for municipalities to extend credit for people to shop more. Is that something that suggests that they've run out of ideas, that they're making fun of themselves? How do you interpret such an odd world in which the poor people have to buy more than the rich people?
Yes, I mean, the rich people have everything, as you say. I think there is in China these programs where they're encouraging people to take their perfectly good washing machines and refrigerators, sell them at a reasonable amount of compensation, and then purchase new stuff. And so people are under pressure to do that. It's considered patriotic. But, you know, there's an enormous crisis of confidence in the future among ordinary Chinese people. And the fact of the collapse of the housing sector and the fact that the government has not been able to resolve this issue is causing a further crisis of confidence in ordinary people about the future. And then there's an expectation, I think, within China, when you understand the nature of of how Chinese people understand the role of the state, which is they're supposed to solve everything. If the stock market goes down, it's expected the state will fix it. If your real estate developer goes bankrupt after taking all your money and doesn't build the apartment that you expected to move into, the state is expected to fix it. If the housing values are going down, Mr. Xi is supposed to get those values back up. And so I think that this is where the crisis is. The university students, the young university students are expecting the state to create the conditions where university students can get proper jobs consistent with their qualifications, and the state is not delivering it. So I think there's a general malaise in the economy and a disappointment, a severe disappointment, a feeling of perhaps betrayal that Mr. Xi is not delivering what a benevolent good emperor should be doing, which is creating prosperity, stability, and happiness among all the people. So it's a different attitude than we have towards our governments, which tend to be forgiven on the basis that, you know, their economic cycles and that kind of thing. So I'm not confident that Mr. Xi is going to be able to solve this problem. It's all very well to say, please buy more people. It's along the same lines as the upcoming enormous demographic crisis, where the state is trying to encourage young people to have more children. And women are saying, I'm not interested in getting married and having multiple children. And it's really very hard for the state to do more than exhort, because they no longer have the confidence of the people. People just don't believe that this regime is a regime which is serving the overall interests of them. And that, I think, is very dangerous for the Chinese Communist Party's political future. The values of the regime and the values of ordinary people are getting wider and wider, and people are more and more discouraged by the current Chinese politics.
Gordon, you want to comment about this talk that the fourth plenum is going to mandate municipalities to extend loans, maybe even forgive debt?
I think that certainly they'll try and do that as a communist top-down solution that they would think of. The problem is that it's not going to work. You have to create the conditions where people are optimistic for them to consume. And that is the issue for China. There is this pervasive gloom over society. People are sullen. They have dropped out. They are trying to leave the country. Yes. Now, China can, because it's got this surveillance state, which is very sophisticated, very pervasive, very coercive, they can prevent people from actually expressing discontent in the way the regime doesn't like. But every once in a while, we have seen Chinese society explode. It exploded in October of 2022 with a series of extraordinary protests across the country. And eventually, after about 2.5-3 months, those protests died down. But we know that the Chinese people are not happy. And the way the country is going is certainly not going to increase their sort of optimism about the way society is headed.
Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. And for our Canadian listeners, keenly aware of Charles's new book, this is the background for where we are right now, which sounds to me as an amateur outsider as a recognizable crisis. The book is The Beaver and the Dragon, How China Outmaneuvered Canada's Diplomacy, Security, and Sovereignty, by Charles Burton. The editor is Kevin Cavanaugh. It's on Amazon right now. Gordon Chang, Charles Burton, and the mystery of the fourth plenum to be solved in coming weeks.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.